In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. This is a warning delivered by a Serbian citizen who, like billions worldwide, have watched how a landslide victory for President Trump was swiftly stolen. They watched how the corporate press said there was no evidence of election fraud. It's not going to be easy to overtly steal an election, threaten and censor those who exposed the fraud, and think you're going to unite the country. Things might have been very different without a pandemic, but alas, the warning from Serbia. Let's have a listen.
Hello, Americans. I guess that you have forgot something. And maybe a Serbian guy should tell you what to do. Strange, huh? I never put my foot on American soil. I never touched America, but somehow I love America. I love your values. I love what you represent. I love freedom. And now I see something that I have seen 20 years ago when I was a high school kid. It was October of 2000 and my country was in its most important day in recent history. Our dictator Milosevic stole the elections. He used all the tactics that you see now. Everything that you have seen in Project Veritas was modus operandi of him. Everything. We knew what happened. You knew. You know what happened. Now it's the question, what are you going to do? In October of 2000, my country done something extraordinary. After being obedient for 10 years, after sitting in tanks to pointlessly die, after many treasons and hopeless future, we somehow decided that it was time to do something, to fight for freedom. Milosevic stole the elections and people took the streets. It started with strikes, civil disobedience, and then all the Serbia came to Belgrade. More than a million people. In a country that total population was maybe 8 million. So basically everyone who could walk went to Belgrade to protest. Milosevic had very serious people on his side, at least on paper. Those were warriors for 10 years. It's what they were doing. And somehow, when they have seen that sea of people, they decided to back off. They have seen that they would fight lost cause. His general said no. His police chiefs said no. People just overwhelmed him. There was even a guy who took a bulldozer. And he used that bulldozer to destroy state television. You think that you're the only one who have fake news? Kids. You know nothing. You don't know what fake is. Now the question is, do you have a guts? Do you have a guts to take the streets and reclaim what is yours? You know that they stole the elections. You know it's obvious to everyone with two brain cells. And up to this moment, you were smart. They wanted to incite racial war, but you were smart. Thanks God you were smart. You didn't took the bite. Black Americans decided to be Americans, and white Americans realized that Black Americans are, guess what, also Americans. I'm proud of you, but now you have one more battle. Because this will not be a war, this will be a battle. They are never going to be as weak as now, and you are never going to be as strong as now. If you lose now, it will be game over. Once installed, socialism will never leave. Never. Not a single country in Eastern Europe was able to get rid of it. Not even after decades. Not even after two generations. World that you know will stop to exist. You will never going to reclaim it again. Never. Russians couldn't. Ukrainians couldn't. Baltic guys couldn't. Czechs, Slovaks, Poles, Serbs, Croats, Slovenes, all Yugoslavia, Bulgarians, Romanians, Albanians, not a single one was able to overthrow them in real sense of matter. All of us kept living mediocre lives, working for $500 per month. And that was it. All because God knows when we lost. And we were not the only ones who fought. Romanians were even crazier. They overthrew Ceausescu by rushing towards Kalashnikovs barehanded. He sent tanks on them. They didn't care. They had nothing to lose. Their Olympic champions risked their lives to get out of there. Hungarians fought too, but Russian tanks were more decisive. Even today you can see bullet holes on facades in Budapest. They are never going to repair them, just to remember. Czechs fought, lost. Poles lost. All of them. Now it's your turn. If you don't like freedom, you don't like it. That's it. Nobody is going to help you. Nobody.
I would say people in the United States know what a false flag is, and if history repeats itself, there will likely be events that are of the false flag nature happening at locations, times, and dates that line up with deadly occult numerology. All part of forcing people in this country into the Fourth Industrial Revolution or the Great Reset. Another big thank you to listener Kent in New Jersey for sending me information on how the mRNA vaccine, according to Dr. David Martin's research, is not legally a vaccine. Dr. Martin says, quote, "This is not a vaccine. We need to be really clear. We're using the term vaccine to sneak this thing under the public health exemptions. It's not a vaccine. This is an mRNA packaged in a fat envelope delivered to a cell. Vaccines actually are a legally defined term, and they're legally defined under public health law. They're legally defined under the CDC and FDA standards. And a vaccine specifically has to stimulate both an immunity within the person who is receiving it, but it also has to disrupt transmission. And that's not what this is. They have been abundantly clear in saying that the mRNA strand that is going into the cell is not stopping transmission. It is a treatment. But if it was discussed as a treatment, it would not get the sympathetic ear of the public health authority, because then people would say, well, what other treatments are there? Now keep that in mind as we hear part of an interview with Allison McDowell, who is an independent researcher and writes about the intersection of technology and predatory philanthropy. Her website is wrenchinthegears.com. Allison is the guest on Sayer G's show, who is the founder of greenmedinfo.com. And he's the co-founder and CEO of Systome Biomed. Let's have a listen.
What I really want to talk about a little bit is about both the financial structures that are being embedded in the Medicaid and Medicare systems and the healthcare systems that is going to be framed as preventative health. But the preventative health, and I know that you guys are very, you know, familiar with like the terrain theory. They're not going to clean up the world to make it healthy so we can live in it. They're going to continue to poison the world and make us operate in this sort of poison, toxic, dangerous world. And then they're going to bet on our performance in that. So let me...
And then they're going to blame a, quote, viral particle for all of those conditions.
Right. It's amazing to have an invisible enemy, right, that you've made up in an equation, you know, in computing. So I just for framing this, you know, I threw this out last night because I was working on my slides up. I was up really late and then up early. And, you know, I was just trying to figure out, are we already in the, my friend Joseph already talks about, we're in the game. And I'm like, is AI in charge? Like general artificial intelligence? Like, is this the cosmos? Is it AI? Like who is running this? Because I've, you know, continually have interesting things happen to me and come across the paths of people who are helping me on my journey. And it's interesting to sort of debate the mechanistic aspect versus the natural energetic aspect. But this is someone's response to my tweet asking about that. And they said, you know, maybe it's like this crazy Hollywood B movie with all of these paths. You know, it's like those books. I don't know. I had them in middle school that were choose your own adventure. You need to read and then you'd flip and they'd say, if you want to do this, go to page 77. If you want to do that, go to page 102. And you'd flip. And so, you know, there were all of these different optional endings. So even though what I'm putting forth seems very it seems like they have all the cards. I really don't think they have all the cards. And I do believe that in my heart that the creator of the world would not want us to all be wiped off the planet and turned into batteries for a matrix of an AI. I don't believe that ultimately that is how it will go. And if you haven't read, I try to read it once a year, A Wrinkle in Time is a book that I read. It's a children's book. And it's kind of complicated because it actually talks about sort of quantum physics and space. And ultimately, that in the end, it is they are prevailing over technocracy. And it is this the evil force is called IT. And what prevails over IT is love. It is the love of a girl for her brother. And that is what overcomes what seems like the impossible. And so I have one of my friends and advisors, but he promises that there is an amazing gathering in the Valley of Love after the zombie apocalypse. So I'm kind of going with that maybe it's all fixed out there somewhere already. And we're just sort of going through these different quantum, you know, dimensions along the way and doing our crazy, terrible Hollywood B movie version. And we will get there. But that's sort of my intro framing. And then also one of the other people that I draw on a lot is who I believe is really a prophetic voice for this moment is John Trudell and also his wife, Tina, who was murdered in a house fire with her children. Mm-hmm. And I think in many respects, the Indigenous worldview has always been a direct threat and confrontation to this mechanized so-called enlightenment scientist version of the world. And John Trudell has amazing speeches, but one of the things that most resonates is that he says that we have a responsibility to use the intelligence given to us by the creator to go up against this machine of technologic. Mm-hmm. And we're not the first. Other people have put themselves up against this machine of technologic. He puts a hyphen, technologic, but that we have to be thinkers. That we can't just sit back and believe, because believing is passive and thinking is active. And so I do feel like those of us who can see what is unfolding right now, that we should take that into our hearts. And even, you know, though it, you know, these challenges can really get us down, to know that we're doing this important work. Like if we can see it, that we are here to do this important work.
If I could add to, you know, the thing about the binary sort of cortex, it's totally perfectly complementary and, you know, capturable by the techno system, but the heart, as you're speaking to, is not, and it is infinitely more intelligent, can grasp infinitely more. So that's where I really love what you're saying, and just would remind people out there that that's really the answer to how we overcome this. It's not going to make sense up here, but it will in the heart.
I think so. And I think, well, I'll talk a little bit more about like energetic and electrical systems later on, because I do think, and I'm learning more. I've learned so much during this process. But that energy flows is very central to all of what's coming, well, all of what has happened in the past and all of what's sort of flowing forward. But when I was doing research around education and education technology, there was a rabbit hole, and it was called an entity called Global Education Futures Forum. And the head of this, his name was Pavel Lekcha. He was based out of Skolkovo, which is in like the Silicon Valley of Russia. And he's a transhumanist. And so they had developed, with individuals from all over the world, very influential. The one for the United States, his name was Tom Vander Ark, and he had formerly worked for the Gates Foundation. And they created a lot of infographics sort of anticipating what education would be like moving forward. And so this is just a screenshot that clips out a piece of one of these maps. But you can see, you know, I've circled this new models of human capital investment. So that is an indication of these new human capital bonds that have really been in the works somewhat since the mid-1990s. But now that the technology with the blockchain identity and the 5G, it's ready to come on at scale. But you can see even above, there's like this prenatal university, like prenatal education. And I want to emphasize that so much of this that is coming is based in genomics and bioinformatics, but it is steeped in eugenics, okay? It is steeped in this idea of controlling people's lives based on their DNA and this sense that you can engineer someone to be an optimum human, that is something that these individuals with all of this demented power feel like that they have the right to do that to people, either through digital technologies or potentially nanotechnologies and bioengineering. So the framework of both enslavement and indigenous erasure is really important. So again, I had mentioned earlier about the Indian reservations, and actually this is another piece. I'm in Pennsylvania, so Carlisle residential school, which was essentially these schools where they, you know, took children, is right here. I actually took my family there, but it's still on the grounds of the Army War College, right? So this war against Indigenous people continues to be waged, and it has this long legacy. And so I know a lot of us are talking under lockdown about concerns about food security, right? Controlling the food source. And that was one way in which the government, like when they put people onto these reservations, made promises about annuity payments that they could eat. And then they would deny them and withhold them. And this is an individual who had said, you know, that they can just eat grass, that the Lakota can eat grass. And what ensued after that was actually the Dakota, they called it the Dakota Wars. And as a result, actually on this date, and this is why it's so significant, like there are these synchronicities, right? Wow. You know, on this date in 1862 was the largest mass execution that was carried out in Mankato of the Dakota, who had defended themselves and their families from being trapped on these reservations, on these concentration camps, essentially, by the U.S. government. And that was authorized by Lincoln. So when we understand this history, that's why I'm sort of trying to surface this, is that we are doing this work now, not just in the effort to protect ourselves and our families and our communities and future generations from the prospect of potentially being fundamentally shifted into transhumanism or synthetic biology but that we're actually doing this work for the ancestors, right? For those who went before who did not get justice. Mm-hmm. And that's what I try to bring.
And if I could just add real quick, Allison, is that we reported recently on the CDC having a page on their site that talks about confinement centers called green zones that would be set up for high risk COVID populations. And, you know, arguably that wouldn't just be for those who are elderly or, you know, minorities, but who haven't taken, say, for example, the mRNA vaccine or haven't subjected themselves to these tests that don't actually work. So, you know, it's not like there isn't a parallel occurring now because perhaps we've never addressed our history, as you're saying. So just
right. Yeah. And I mean, there was a political economy built on empire, right? It was our domestic empire through various broken treaties, fraudulent, you know, of acquiring the land to roll out this nation, right? And to the detriment of those individuals, there is an economic reason behind it. Now we are seeing an economic reason that the billionaires are looking to build a world of fourth industrial revolution that's run pretty much by themselves and their robots so that they can have a resort of the world with very few people. And so there's not a need for people on the land anymore to be doing labor, to be doing industrial manufacturing, to be being teachers and doctors. They're going to put most of that online and they don't care if a lot of people die as a result. And you know, that connects into Agenda 21 and the removal of people off of land into sort of mega city regions. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it is very consistent with what's playing out. And I just want to say, like, this visual for me, I spent some time in South Dakota on Lakota land this summer, and I was seeing spider webs all the time. There were these amazing, I spent some time trying to work on making a garden there. And one of my first days I was clearing, they had plowed some of the, or cut the grass, and we were creating beds. And I left my glasses, and there was some trash that had blown in because it's very, very windy there, and it doesn't go away. So it gets caught under the sagebrush. And so I was picking up sort of trash after the grass had gotten mown, and I didn't have my glasses on, and I reached down in the grass, and I thought it was something like a Brillo pad or some fluff, like a cushion fluff or something like that. And I realized it was like a bazillion tiny baby spiders there in the grass. Mm-hmm. And like all throughout that, I would water in the dusk, and it was all of these little ground spiders. So, you know, for me, it's a lot of it is, how do you talk? They talk in symbols, right? They use symbolic language. They use symbolic visuals. And I want to use these two images to sort of convey through the course of my talk, the people who would like to bet on our lives and control us and put us in little confinement so that AI can learn how we operate and learn us and limit our lives, restrict it into these tiny little spheres, like we're all, you know, sitting in our little rooms. That is this crazy pathway. I think it's somewhere in Spain. It's like the world's most dangerous path. And they'd like to keep us isolated and keep us on the pathway. Now, they can maybe say we can go fast or slow on their pathway, but it's their pathway and we can't get off. That is the version of the world that they're trying to impose with blockchain identity. And what I'm saying is that there's a beautiful, like, universe, natural universe of represented by the spider web, an interconnection of different paths and the ways in which spiders actually also consume their webs and then respin. And so to me, in my mind, that if we're aspiring, like keeping in mind an aspirational goal, it is more towards the interconnected spider web of our lives connected with others, having multiple paths and multiple options and multiple redos, right? Because we're all human and we're going to fail, and we shouldn't be stuck on a path of that sort. That's where they want us. That's where the AI wants us. So in January, I actually went down to Dallas and Tulsa to give a talk to some friends about blockchain education. And my friend Lynn, who's wonderful, and we were in the car on the highway in Dallas, and I'm like, you know, I'm trying to figure out how to tell people what this is like. And I said, the best I can imagine it is, I said, imagine like we're in a mixed reality video game, right? Like a Pokemon Go, right? So it's like a video game, but it's also Pokemon Go. It's in the real world. And it was set up by these, you know, business people, the Ivy League, because we're supposed to respect them because they have fancy degrees. And these Ivy League MBAs, they've put up the money for this game. But it was actually built by state surveillance interests and defense contractors, because much of the gaming and simulations world come out of defense contracting in Hollywood, right? So that's the PSYOP piece. So they're like, we can brainwash you. We have really sophisticated technology. We're going to put you in our game. And then that game runs to make money for these hedge funds, which are not, that is not money that benefits people. That is money that concentrates wealth and power in the top tiniest percent and then leaves everyone else dispossessed. And so they're going to put us on in the game, and then they're going to place their bets on if we will perform the right behaviors. And those behaviors are going to be aligned to the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, of which health is number three. So good health, that is one of the behaviors, that's goal three. And then as we play the game, we will be given this digital script. That's the digital cash wallets. And the corporate state. So this is the state, but it really is fascist. This is your government run by Google and Goldman Sachs. So they will give you script if you behave in their maze, and that the people who are managing this maze are the nonprofit entities and also the faith communities, because many of these powerful faith communities also have large pools of assets, including the Vatican, because we've seen recently about their alliance that they've made for inclusive capitalism, and that they're the dungeon masters. So just like sit with that for a minute. And that's what we're looking at. And I know it seems outlandish, but I make these maps. And this, to my best ability, is my understanding of where things are going.
Allison, have you seen Social Dilemma on Netflix?
I haven't watched the whole thing. I mean, anything on Netflix, you know, is doing their work.
I mean, I agree, but that was what was so crazy about it, was they showed this digital twin concept, and it's a grotesque horror. So I just was just going to confirm for those who think this sounds crazy, it's actually being documented out there, even by these very big tech firms that are in collusion with the project.
Yeah, I would say, I know like Shoshana Zuboff gets a lot of traction out there. I mean, she's a professor from Harvard Business School. So clearly she's sitting at the table of the people who are building this machine. And yeah. I know she was at a gathering with Kevin Werbach, who I'll talk about later, from Wharton. Another book that I do recommend is Surveillance Valley by Yasha Levine. And he really frames the internet as a military enterprise. And so I think those of us who lean more towards like an anti-imperialist peace framing, that book is very vital. And it also plays into some of the discussions around blockchain moving forward. Can you find liberation in the master's tools? You know, can you navigate, are you going to find freedom in a technology that is fundamentally militarized? And to me, you know, I have my own personal understanding that I would say no. Maybe other people are still convinced that it could be otherwise. But in this, I just want to say, you know, Gates provides a lot of cover for other people. Michael Bloomberg, I think, is perhaps even more dangerous. And these two have, you know, teamed up. They've collaborated together. They worked on the domain awareness system for New York City, which was their coordinated facial recognition camera security apparatus. They go way back. So these guys are a formidable pair. You know, Bill Gates, his job is to get us all tagged into the human capital system through the vaccine platform. And he also has side deals, you know, running the GMO foods and the, you know, private for-profit prisons and a lot of other things he'll make money on. But his job is to get us on the blockchain. Michael Bloomberg will then run the global police state. Okay. And he will do that. The global police state will not look the same as we understand the carceral state today. It needs to go beyond the new Jim Crow. The new version will be an open air global prison run, perhaps a little softer, I won't say much softer, by social workers and healthcare providers. And your body will be your prison, you know, in a sense. So that is their framing, is what they would like to see it. So next to it, though, I juxtapose, I spent some time, like I said, in South Dakota, actually, and this place is Promise, right? And so that's very symbolic, actually, and the more I think about it. They don't control, I mean, literally, they don't control that because that's indigenous sovereign land. But they don't control the cosmic entities, the sky, the sunsets, even at these microscopic levels and the wildflowers. They don't control all of it. They control some of it. And I think we can sometimes get caught up in feeling like they can control everything, but they don't. They don't control everything. So this is a very interesting thing to me. And folks who maybe have a more familiarity, you know, the occult aspects of this, the sort of Freemasonry, the going way back is not my strength. But I feel like it is very significant that Michael Bloomberg established his European headquarters in London, and which is the center of blockchain. But this opened in 2017, I believe, and he built it over the archaeological remains of this temple of Mithras.
Wow.
So it's pretty serious. I mean, he had money; he could build it anywhere, right? And that is where he built it. And so Mithras is this god of sun, justice, and contracts. So I really want to point out contracts, because the video game world that they would like us to live in is based on this presumption that the world, our engagement with nature and the physical world and the built environment, will be mediated through digital contracts. Okay. That our ability to engage or not engage will be predetermined by our status in the world. And we're already seeing that with the mobility biometric passports. But that will go at a scale that we can't even imagine. And in that Black Mirror episode, Nosedive, is sort of predictive programming for that. Your social credit score dictates what you are allowed to do in society. So this contract piece, and I just found this morning, is very important. The idea of these Ethereum smart contracts tied to social credit scoring is part of the Internet of Agreements. And this is a company, Materium, also based in London. And for people who are more familiar than I am in the sovereignty movement, is that the understanding is that the blockchain center needed to be London because that was the center of maritime trade law. Mm-hmm. So the maritime trade laws, the cloud, what is the jurisdiction of the cloud? Right? This is what Yasha Levine asked. Who runs the cloud, right? A certain type, a small subset of individuals. What are legal jurisdictions for digital twins in the cloud? And these are all things that we need to be thinking about. It's a new form of vocabulary. And those who are rolling this agenda out are very familiar with it, but it's something that we need to become more familiar with. So I had mentioned before that this is going to align with the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. Most people, if you have not looked at them, you might presume that they are mostly about the environment, right? That's what Extinction Rebellion, that's what sort of the corporate wrong kind of green has framed it, that it is about saving the planet. Two thirds of those goals, there are 17, are actually about managing poor people. They're about managing poverty. And so this is about this new version of inclusive capitalism. And clearly a hinge in this is managing global health. And I did not appreciate this until pandemic hit. I did not know what the trigger for this rollout was going to be. Clearly it is the pandemic. And so I'm spending more time looking at the health side because your status, essentially, you are presumed to be guilty of living in a human body. You're guilty because you might be a threat, you might be toxic, until you are managed through our technological systems. And in that way, your body can then become the limiting factor in your life experience, right? Where you can go, where you can move. And I'm trying to, hopefully, if people are listening around the immigration rights movements with global geofencing, because the individuals involved in this who are remaking nonprofits for data-driven government are, one of the major ones is Hewlett-Packard. They're also the ones putting laptops for digital education in all the kids' hands. So Hewlett-Packard is running the border, biometric border control in Gaza, which is in my mind, fundamentally, the prototype open-air prison. Mm-hmm. So we need to understand that Hewlett-Packard has remade nonprofits for data-driven investment and that they are running education sectors. I would not be surprised if they're also in the healthcare sector, and that they're doing border control, which at this point, if you cannot prove that you are safe, quote unquote, as a healthy being with all the right papers, you may not be able to leave your house. Mm. Like your geofencing could be your front door. Your geofencing could be, okay, well, we'll let you go 5 miles from your house. Well, you have to stay in your state. You know, they can essentially, through satellite geofencing, control people's ability, mobility. And all of our care, all of our social care has to become platformed for these deals that I'm going to be talking about because it all runs on data. It all runs on data analytics. And that's where, again, the energetic system, the electrical engineering, we have to be turned into data, these binary ones and zeros, to be processed through these systems to have profit extracted from our bodies and our social relationships. So the reason that we're losing our education and our in-person education, our in-person healthcare, our in-person therapy is because of these deals, because they will need to extract the data and the predictive analytics out of these online platforms in order to run the next version.
Allison, if I could just jump out here a second. So, you know, in this window, I've been doing a lot to try to bring awareness to the fact that they've just redefined our body as a threat to the world, basically, you know, because we have a microbiome, we have a viral, and we have exosomes. So therefore, we are potentially, you know, bioterrorist vectors. So the piece that you're bringing in is so important, which is in order to, you know, roll out this new surveillance era where they're penetrating into the body. And then we can talk later about, you know, sort of the cellular colonization, which you bring up in one of your presentations. They're now transforming that surveillance into data, which is then a new capital market. But it all fits in now so much better in understanding why they would do such a thing, because most people are like, they can't believe they would just do this, you know, but now it makes more sense given what you're bringing to light.
Well, and the interesting, so again, and there's language around it, right? The full Babylon service. I mean, it's kind of in your face what's going on here, that they're going to use their data analytics. Like, look, you know, now we're all going to experience everything through our phones for the full Babylon service. And, you know, it's very strange because I don't like normally, like my mode of operation really is primary source material, like looking at people's LinkedIns, looking at World Bank white papers, listening to webinars of what the industry is saying that they're planned. It's not actually hidden if you're willing to synthesize it. And I think the reality is that most people who are pulling down a six-figure salary in one of those spaces are not in a position to question it. And then most people who are most impacted, the poor, are living their lives and they certainly don't have time to spend weeks and weeks and months poring over this material. So I'm in a really kind of a singular space to be able to do this work. But it also lays on the land in Philadelphia. And it, you know, it has this history. And when you spoke about the microbiome, I'm trying to remember, his name is slipping my mind, but in 1694, the Silesian monk came to Philadelphia to await the end of the world with 40 monks, and they were waiting for the woman in the wilderness, and they were out in what is now the Wissahickon Park. It's in the city of Philadelphia, and they were alchemists, and they did very interesting choral singing, which I find interesting. And his cave, Kelpius, Johannes Kelpius, Kelpius cave is still in the park. And the cave is really more like a spring house, right? But it's an underground room with a door. And there's a monument right outside. It's in the public park. You can go see. And it's from the Rosicrucians. And evidently Kelpius was the first Rosicrucian in Philadelphia. And so this monument is from the Rosicrucians honoring Kelpius. And it's this granite monument. And on the side of it, so one day I wanted to go see it, and I had connected with someone, some people in your audience may be familiar, he's a very interesting guy, does very interesting research. His name is Roz Ben, and he's a geomancer, but he looks at art and history and some of these other like sort of hidden histories. And, you know, he had said his thesis is that Ben Franklin opened the gates of hell in Philadelphia. With Prometheus. And it's electrical, again, more electricity, which is very interesting. But he had told me about this cave. So I'm like, I'm going to go see this cave. So I saw the monument on the side of this monument. Maybe someone can help me figure this out, in Greek, written, not in spray paint and not inscribed, but very carefully in Greek. It said Nephili.
Nephili? Like as Nephili, in Nephili?
On the side of this monument. Okay.
That's like as in these bloodlines that control
the world. Nephili is a myth. It's a Greek myth of the cloud goddess. And Ixion had lusted after Hera. So Zeus turned this cloud nymph into a twin of Hera. And then she was raped. And from that came the centaurs. And a lot of times now they're talking about cyborgs, that it's better to call them centaurs. And then later, like the twins, there was famine, there was the seeds failed, the crops failed. And the ram with the golden fleece came to save the twins. But there's this interesting connection of Nephili between twins, clouds, violence, hybrid beings, children taken. If you actually look it up, the NIH, the National Institutes of Health, just created a software platform for mapping the microbiome called Nephili.
Oh, no way. Really? Wow.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. There are these overlaps of like, history, symbol, signs, but last fall, Penn, which is Ben Franklin's university, just did the first human CRISPR trials. So we're really, there are all of these layers going on. I'm not trying to be, but I think it's significant that there are these histories that need to be integrated, that people with, who may know, have access to other knowledges, are know this and are using it. Doing this work before the pandemic, I said, I almost feel like I need like a background in semiotics, because they use language in ways that they say one thing and mean another. And so if you don't know their true intended meaning of how they talk about things, you will be totally misled. You know, and I have a lovely community elder, you know, who's always, she's like, Allison, you need a glossary. You need a glossary to interpret what they're actually saying. But I feel in some ways this, like a spell, they have used language and imagery to cast a spell over so many, it's interesting. So it's important to know, like if people are like, I don't really know, really human capital bonds? Yes. So this is from the San Francisco Federal Reserve. They are very much in the lead on developing this space. And now it makes perfect sense to me. It really just sunk into me last night. Stanford was the epicenter of developing social innovation. And much of it was also connected to engineering and business analytics and wearable technology. Okay. So if you imagine that the global digital prison run from space is going to like control your body through wearable or ingestible or implantable tech, that the fact that it's the San Francisco Federal Reserve that is setting up these bond markets that will turn you into data and harvest your data, your life force as data through these different devices and required behaviors that will track your compliance to these assigned pathways, that it would be coming out of the San Francisco Fed. And Ian Galloway is a central figure in this. But it comes earlier. This is Stephen Rothschild collaborated with an economist at the Minneapolis Federal Reserve in the mid-1990s to create the concept of essentially a performance-based government contract. They will change up the names. It used to be social impact bonds, development impact bonds, pay for success, pay for performance. Ultimately, it is about a government contract that is tied to data. The payment is incumbent on a certain data outcome being shown. So these human capital performance bonds happen. I've made these little, my artist kind of, you know, basic, but I was trying to explain this to people, these social impact bonds. And so I made a video about 2 or 3 years ago and just trying to lay it out visually. But it's important to understand that all of this is advancing on austerity. It's all advancing on global austerity, both austerity of people, of people's personal budgets and deep debt, but also austerity in government. Because what's coming, this sort of techno-fascism, relies on the idea of a public-private partnership. If our government, if Amazon paid taxes and our government had money to take care of people's needs, people who are in need, whether it would be their health or their housing or their education, we would not be in this situation. So this is sliding in. This has been in the works. As I said, Stephen Rothschild and Art Rolnick were working in the mid-1990s. There's been several decades of austerity that have teed all of this up, and it's central. And you know, I will frame this. This is a racialized endeavor. This is coming after all of us, but it's a program that runs on poverty and trauma. So the people who are first up and who it's being prototyped on are Black and brown people and Indigenous people and dispossessed people and refugees. Okay, so it is sort of the global North going after the global South and also going after the poor of our country. So
can I add something, Allison? So sure. Here in Florida, I read the 52-page document on how they're going to distribute the COVID vaccines, and they make it so explicit that they're targeting minority groups under the false auspices of them being underserved, underprivileged. So everything seems so inverted, but just to confirm what you're saying, it's very targeted to those groups.
If we understand that what we are up against is in the near future, a sublimation of humanity into some cyborg, transhumanist, neural web, hive mind scenario, it actually, like the differences in some of the identity politics stuff, if we're willing to come from a heart space and we're willing to actually understand the history of it, but it's a unifying opportunity. Like nobody wants this stuff that's coming. Nobody, it's a billionaire's project. And then some people are deluded because they're getting a salary and maybe they think that they're going to be kept out of it. But essentially what's happening is capitalism is moving into the virtual world and taking everything else with it and turning us into digital twins in the process. And so if we can just communicate that to people, they want to use the partisanship to divide people so that we're fighting each other instead of looking at Davos. They want to push everybody, like every single element that would identify, like, you know, whether it's, you know, women, Black, brown, Indigenous, religious groups, they want everyone to be divided. And what I'm saying is in any box that they would like to put us in, because they want us in lots of boxes, and I'll show you later, the Skinner box, they would like to keep us in boxes, that no box has all the good people or all the bad people. And so my task is, bad being, you know, in quotes, I guess, but our task feels like it is to be able to pull the people who are coming from a space of love and caring of humanity and nature, the natural world, out of the boxes so that we can face this challenge that's coming. So yes, the public-private partnership is central to this program. So the government says, we don't have really the money to do this, or we're not feeling like it. We're going to outsource it to a nonprofit and investors. You can front that money. And this is going to be a little, I'm going to spend a minute with this. This is the social impact bond structure. Essentially, the entire construct of pay-for-success finance is predicated on using data to predictively profile individuals and communities into being future burdens on society. Okay, let me just... So the idea of this structure is that every person is a burden. Some are more of a burden than others on society, and that has a cost attached. Okay, so it's based on data, it's based on machine learning, it's based on profiling, whether or not a lot of that data in the AI is racialized and wrong and bad data. But they're going to do it anyway because they're the ones running the game. if they can come up with a quote unquote solution in the framing of an evidence-based, that's their language, evidence-based program. Sometimes in the healthcare space, they call it value-based program that has data to show that you have reduced, you fixed this person, even preemptively, then essentially in this space, this reduction. So say this is incarcerated people, which is a huge cost offset. It's based in carbon credit trading. There's this huge cost offset. Whether this cost offset is prison, this cost offset could be the payments to manage people on Medicaid who are diabetic. It could be the cost offset of underemployment because people are depressed. This is the burden. You're predictively profiled, and they say if we fix you, we've saved you all of this money. Aren't we wonderful with our nonprofit evidence-based program that's backed by investors? Can we just have our money back? And we're just like a little slice of this for our profit. We don't need a lot. Just give us a little bit. And then look at all of this that you've saved. You've saved a ton of money on your own, and we'll just take a little bit. Okay. So that is the narrative of this structure. Look, everybody is broken. We're going to fix you. The fix, remember, has to be data-driven. So that's why you have to have a Hewlett-Packard Chromebook or, you know, Chromebook. That's why you can't go see your doctor. That's why, you know, my elderly father with dementia that the Alzheimer's place would only do tele appointments. You know, tell me how that works, right? That's why we're going to be slipping sensors in babies' tunics to listen to their parents talk to them because they need the data. Now, this profit in and of itself is not much money. And that's what people say. They say, well, they must be doing it. JP Morgan Chase and Goldman Sachs out of the goodness of their own heart, because it's not that much money, right? They're not making that much money on it. They're just doing it because they care about kids having pre-K, or they care about people returning from prison having a job, or they care about people having healthier, more nutritious meals. That's not true. They need it to move their money. And so the big money is going to be in creating hedge fund markets. They are going to securitize the debt on the program investments. They're going to securitize that debt, and then they are going to trade it on global markets. But they cannot run this game of hedge fund trading. Like I said from the beginning, imagine the mortgage, the asset-backed securities now are toddlers, pregnant women, the lonely elderly people, people returning from prison. The debt tied to all of those people is securitized and traded on global markets. And this is not just US, right? Like if you're in these programs, the debt attached to you is being bought up by SoftBank, the Vatican, the Saudi Sovereign Wealth Fund, you know, all of these different, your pension funds, Kaiser Permanente, TIA, CREF, they're all putting a chunk of you. You're just part of somebody's portfolio. And that's what it goes back to that early slide. So, it may not make sense. It may seem crazy, but if you understand that the whole asset-backed securities and the collateralized debt obligations of the last time were crazy, they're just making it a game, okay? But they cannot play this game if this structure does not exist. That they must create and be able to scale this. It has to scale. And what they need to scale it is they need blockchain identity, and they need 5G, eventually 6G, to track you in real time in the surveillance state to inform the securitization and the gambling on that by the hedge funds.
Now remember, Dr. Thomas Cowan, a medical doctor in San Francisco, hypothesized that the coronavirus outbreak could be a biological response to historic quantum leaps in electromagnetic changes to the environment.
In 1918, after the biggest pandemic, the Spanish flu pandemic of 1918, Steiner was asked, what was this all about? And he said, well, viruses are simply excretions of a toxic cell. Viruses are pieces of DNA or RNA with a few other proteins. They bud out from the cell. They happen when the cell is poisoned. They are not the cause of anything. And the first way I would encourage you to think about this is if you are a famous dolphin doctor, right, and you have been studying dolphins in the Arctic Circle for hundreds of years, or at least a long time, and the dolphins were fine. And then they call you up, Fred, all the dolphins or a lot of the dolphins are dying in the Arctic Circle. Can you come and investigate? Right? And you have one question to ask. So show of hands, how many of you would say, I want to investigate a dolphin to see the genetic makeup of that dolphin? Nobody, because that's stupid. How many of you would say, I want to see if this dolphin and that dolphin has a virus because it might be contagious and that's why all these dolphins are getting sick? That fellow. How many of you would say, excuse my French here, somebody put some shit in the water here? Like Exxon Valdez? Anybody? Everybody. Because that's what happened. And the cells get poisoned. They try to purify themselves by excreting debris, which we call viruses. If you go to the current theory of viruses called exosomes, and the latest head of the NIH giving a talk on the complexity of viruses, you will see this is perfectly in line with the current thinking on what a virus really is. I had a dramatic example of this when I was growing up. Out right outside our house, there was a wetlands, and they were full of frogs, and the frogs kept me up at night, so I taped the windows, and they were, in the spring, they made a big racket. And then over time, the frogs were all gone. How many thinks the frogs had a genetic disease? How many thinks the frogs had a virus? How many think somebody put DDT into the water? That's what happened. Diseases are poisoning. It's one of the reasons why vaccines... So let me skip that for a minute. So what happened in 1918? There was a huge... In every pandemic in the last 150 years, there was a quantum leap in the electrification of the Earth. In 1918, late fall of 1917, there was the introduction of radio waves around the world. Whenever you expose any biological system to a new electromagnetic field, you poison it, you kill some, and the rest go into a kind of suspended animation so that, interestingly, they live a little bit longer and sicker. And then starts in World War II with the next pandemic with the introduction of radar equipment all over the Earth, blanketing the entire Earth in radar fields. First time humans have ever been exposed to that. In 1968, there was the Hong Kong flu, and it was the first time the Earth has a protective layer in the Van Allen belt, which essentially integrates the cosmic fields from the sun and the Earth, from the moon and Jupiter, etc., integrates that and essentially distributes that to the living beings of the Earth. And we put satellites emitting radioactive frequencies in the Van Allen belt. Within 6 months, we had a new viral pandemic. Why viral? Because the people are poisoned, they excrete toxins, they look like viruses. People think it's a flu epidemic. In the 1918 epidemic, the Boston Health Department decided to investigate the contagiousness of this. So they, believe it or not, took hundreds of people with the flu and they sucked the snot out of their nose and injected it into the healthy people who didn't have the flu, and not one time could they make the next person sick. They did this over and over again, and they were not able to demonstrate contagion. They even did it with horses who apparently got the Spanish flu, and they put bags over their head and the horses sneezed in the bag and they put the bag over the next horse and not one horse got sick. You can read about this in a book called The Invisible Rainbow by Arthur Furstenberg, who chronicles all the steps in the electrification of the Earth and how within 6 months there was a new flu pandemic all over the world. And when you hear the normal explanations, how did it go from Kansas to South Africa in 2 weeks so the entire world got the symptoms at the same time, in spite of the fact that the mode of transportation was horseback and boats, and there's no explanation for it. They just say, we don't know how that happened. But when you think about it, with these radio waves and other frequencies that some of you have in your pocket and on your wrist, you can send a signal to Japan and it arrives instantaneously. So any of you who don't believe, there is an electromagnetic field that communicates globally within seconds, just is not paying attention to this. And I will only finish by pointing out that there has been a dramatic and quantum leap in the last 6 months with the electrification of the Earth. And I'm sure a lot of you know what that is. It's called 5G, where they now have 20,000 radiation-emitting satellites. Just like the radiation-emitting thing in your pocket and on your wrist and that you use all the time. That is not compatible with health. I'm sorry to say it, it's not compatible with health. That is a water destructuring device. And for any of you who say, yeah, well, we're not electrical beings, we're just physical matter, then don't bother doing an EKG or an EEG or a nerve conduction test, because we are electrical beings and the chemicals are only the byproduct of those electrical impulses. And I'll finish with, anybody want to make one guess as to where the first completely blanketed 5G city in the world was? Exactly. So when you start thinking about this, we are in an existential crisis here, folks, the likes of which humankind has never seen. And I don't want to go all Old Testament prophet on you, but this is something that is unprecedented. The putting of 100,000 satellites in the very blanket of the Earth.
Three of the reportedly hardest-hit areas initially of the COVID-19 virus included Washington State, Wuhan, China, and northern Italy. These regions were also ground zero for major fifth-generation wireless radiation installations. It's very interesting to examine this now in the context of Alison McDowell's work and the connection to viral infections, spreading, and 5G millimeter wave frequency transmitting through the living tissue of humans and their environment. That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.